Welcome to the Ultra Runner Magazine podcast. Thanks so much for joining us. Today we're joined by Ultra Trail Drakensberg race director and founder Spurgeon Flemington, who shares a passionate insight into the event's deep connection with the mountains, traversing an iconic wilderness steeped in culture amongst the highest mountains in southern Africa. Spurgeon shares an insight into setting up the events, the challenges along the way, the range of distances, and it also highlights that the passions extend beyond the events to the environment in which he works and lives, directly raising funds to support projects that benefit the local area, helping to improve the surrounding environment and its wild inhabitants. You can't miss this. Ultra Trail Drakensberg, can you tell us a little bit about the race, and was it yourself that set up the events, and why?
Yeah, sure. So I have lived in the Underberg area my whole life, and spent a lot of time in the mountains, which are on our doorstep there. And I sort of had more of a history in personally in things like triathlon and stuff like that, and just used to run in the mountains and on the trails just for fun. And, you know, always thought in the back of my mind it would be great to have some events on these trails, because at that stage there was nothing in the area that catered for pure trail running. And about 10 years ago, I ended up cobbling together a proposal, because the whole trail network that is in the mountains is all under the custodianship of Ezinvelo KZN Wildlife. So it's part of the World Heritage Site. So it's not just a case of, you know, deciding to put on an event and suddenly being able to run on those trails. The points of departure before even taking anything any further was getting full permission from them to see if they'd even consider us having a trail run or runs in the World Heritage Site. So I went to Ezinvelo with a proposal, this must have been 2012, 2013, for a small event called the Giants Cup Trail Run, because a notable feature in the peaks near us are two peaks called the Giants Cup. So and there's a trail, an existing hiking trail, 60-odd Ks, which is called the Giants Cup Hiking Trail. So the initial premise was to have a two-day event on the Giants Cup Trail. I got permission to do that. And that kind of opened the door to then starting to slowly think bigger and better. So the Giants Cup still exists as a trail run, and that's just a smaller event of mine. What I did in 2016 is went back to Ezinvelo KZN Wildlife and said, look, I've got bigger ideas here with regard to a much bigger and sort of more diverse event. And that was obviously the seeds of Ultra Trail Drakensberg. So I gave them the whole proposal with everything I had in mind, and we sort of got a provisional sign off for 1 year, and that ended up being the first UTV in 2017. We didn't have the full bouquet of distances that we now have, so I'm casting my mind back now. And so in 2017 we had the 100K, we had the 62K, and we had the 32K, and we subsequently expanded that offering, obviously.
Yeah. And the area there, it just looks absolutely magnificent. I know that the race highlights take in so much of that, the mountain range there. Mm. Can you tell us a little bit about the route and what's kind of involved, what kind of trails there?
Yeah, absolutely. So the area is in the southern area of the Drakensberg, which is a World Heritage Site. It's a transfrontier park. That's an international transfrontier park that incorporates sections of South Africa and Lesotho. It's the highest mountain range and biggest mountain range in Southern Africa, sort of south of Kilimanjaro. The trail network has been established over many years as hiking trails, and unfortunately, in the last sort of 15 to 20 years, many of them have fallen into disrepair just through lack of use, and they've become very overgrown and closed over. But what I've done is resurrected a number of those trails and incorporated them into UTD.
90% of the trails are in the World Heritage Site, with some sections on some of the distances that do come out into farmland and private property. But yeah, it's just a really unique and fantastic environment. It's sort of, high Southern African grassland, mountain grassland, with a lot of wildlife and rich diversity of wildlife and bird life, and then obviously a very rich cultural history with the sand bushmen and all the paintings that they've done in many of the caves around the mountains. So yeah, a very special place to run in and just to be outdoors.
Yeah, the culture, I think that's something which not many races mean, certainly if you're kind of in the bubble of your own kind of country. But basically, when you go over to places like this, it's a completely different culture. It's a very much a completely different culture than some people will have ever experienced. Would you agree with that? And what kind of in terms of, I know you mentioned about the Bushmen, could you tell us a little bit more about them and
Sure. So the Bushmen themselves are actually have been driven out of the area and into extinction in the sort of late 1800s by a variety of factors, including the European colonialists, as well as the Zulu wars. And there's obviously a big history there where they had a very much a hunter-gatherer lifestyle, which came into direct conflict with livestock owning initially the Zulu populations, and then obviously also European farmers settling in the areas. So they'd been up in the mountains and for thousands of years, and unfortunately, very sad story. But that particular sort of group was basically hounded out in the 1800s, but they've left behind this incredible, visual legacy, which is all over the cave walls throughout the southern Drakensberg. So those are quite remarkable. But unfortunately, as a people, there's no direct contact with them anymore. But then, but what we do, what is very much a more visible cultural experience of UTD in particular, is the 100 miler course. The first 70 k's of the 100 miler course is up on top of the berg in Lesotho, and there you come into direct and contact with the local people there who still also live, many of them, a very sort of rudimentary lifestyle as shepherds, and with their livestock living out on the mountain. And it is a completely, even for South Africans going there, it's a very unique experience. So certainly, for anyone from outside of Africa coming in, it's an amazing experience to encounter the completely different culture, and also just seeing the harsh conditions and the way many of these, these shepherds, some of them are as young as sort of 11 or 12 years old, living out at sort of 3,000 meters elevation, sub-zero temperatures, looking after their flocks of sheep and whatnot. So it's an amazing experience, and that certainly is a very direct and in your face kind of experience of UTD, as opposed to the legacy of the Bushmen.
The work ethic and how they make a living, or in terms of how they live, is completely a contrast to how everybody else does, don't they?
Absolutely. We go running through there with our fancy shoes and our running packs and everything else, and here these guys, sort of existing with gum boots and a blanket it's in sort of minus 10 degrees. It's very
crazy.
Humbling.
Yeah, it's absolutely crazy, isn't it, when you put it like that? Absolutely crazy. Yeah. So the events themselves, the support that you kind of put into place, I mean, there must be an awful lot that goes in to the behind the scenes to put something like this together, because I guess that there's, you know, reception and things like that are all things that you might struggle with.
Yeah, huge challenges, in particular with the 100 mile and the 100K, because they are in the more remote and more extreme areas. Signal is definitely a challenge, but we obviously address that in different ways. So, you know, like the 100 mile runners all carry satellites, trackers and things like that. And obviously, it's a GPS compulsory course. It is fully marked, so that's very much something that we've always focused on, because we don't want to turn it into an adventure style run. And because we are aware that, you know, many Europeans and runners from the States and further afield aren't always that keen on self navigation. So we do mark it as if it's not GPS dependent, but on the flip side, we do make GPS as compulsory. So from a safety point of view, and then also from our ability just to track the athletes and monitor them, it's very important. And yeah, it's just, I mean, you know, five different distances over sort of 45 hours. There's always a demand, you know, a demanding exercise. Yeah. Also, because they all start at different places. They all finish at our race space at the Sarnie Pass Hotel. So all races come, you know, sort of come home, but they do all start in different places and obviously spread all over the place. So it's logistically quite a challenging event. But yeah, we've kind of worked out over the years what's best for us and best for the runners and the supporters. And we think we've got the right sort of formula now, with having moved the, what we did 2 years ago is change things up slightly, so that all five distances now finish at the race base. Because previously they used to start and finish sort of all over the place, and it made it logistically very challenging for us, and then also just challenging for the runners trying to work out, you know, car shuttles and everything else. So it's got its own unique challenges, but so does every event. So
I think it's
much overwhelming.
I think that's every single year is you know, it's a learning curve for us as organizers as well, isn't it, you know? So it's and it's just being in a position where you can kind of go, right, okay, yeah, this is for the best of the race. Because as well, I guess a lot of people might join a race and they might be running with or have friends and family, or they might the friend might do one distance and they may do another distance, and if they're finishing at the same point, then it really kind of helps in terms of that, doesn't it? And the spread of your team, if they're all kind of combining, it just means there's one finish line, there's one focal point where you can all gather.
So, well, that's exactly right. You've nailed it there, because, you know, what we've tried to do is really turn it into a festival of running. And that's obviously a work in progress still. I think we've still got a long way to go. But being able to make it easier for runners logistically and for supporters and family, and also, as you say, having options where, you know, maybe if the wife is doing the 100 mile and the husband wants to do the 21, they can link it up and not be just spread out all over the place. So that's been a very big part of it. And then just on a practical level as well, what prompted this move, or this kind of sort of change in the course and whatnot a couple of years ago, was also that the Sarnie Pass Hotel went through a major upgrade and renovation.
Okay.
So it's now really a very nice quality hotel with sort of 200 rooms, and that's enabled us to really turn that into a race hub of notes, where we book out the entire hotel for the duration of the event. So the whole hotel is basically just runners and runners, supporters and family. So it makes for a very cool vibe. And also practically, it just works really well. And it's also for us, with a big eye on the international audience, you know, we really know that we have to provide some kind of practical base for them that, you know, locals might be happy to drive all over the place and stay in B&Bs yeah. and whatnot, but it does get more challenging if you're flying in from Europe or something like that. It's nice to know that, you know, you can land in Durban and get into one of the shuttles and be at the race base, which is a top quality hotel for the duration of your stay, yeah. and not have to worry about anything else. And, you know, we are aware that, you know, South Africa does, you know, people are nervous of the unknown, and so they're quite happy to run 100 miles in the mountains, but they might be more nervous about driving from Durban to Underberg, which is, you know, where the base is. So we're trying to leverage that side of things as well to ensure that, you know, international runners coming in see us as a viable destination that's not necessarily, you know, out in the sticks and difficult to access.
Yeah, absolutely, and it does look superb, and the setup, and having that that option just in one place, really, there, just I mean, you know, from a perspective that from the UK, let's say, for example, I would take my wife, you know, and maybe the kids, you know, but certainly, you know, my wife would want to go, you know, so it's certainly one of them, you know, so yeah, it just makes it more of a destination, doesn't it? So yeah, brings it into one. I did notice on the website that that basically you're also part of the entry fee goes towards certain kind of causes. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yes. Yeah. So as I said in the beginning, with regard to getting the initial permission, we had to deal with the sort of custodians of the World Heritage Site, which is Ezumvelo KZN Wildlife. And in my initial proposal to them, what was a donation from a portion of each runner's entry fee. So that has grown over the years, and now is really quite a substantial contribution that the event is able to make to the park and everything else. And so, yeah, we raise quite significant funds every year through that entry fee, or through that portion of the entry fee.
Yeah.
And yeah, what's really great is that we've managed to make sure that those funds are ring fenced and are put straight back into the areas that we run through, whether it's simple things like trail maintenance and removal of alien vegetation, right up to putting in swing bridges and solar panels for the rangers and at their accommodation, and getting radios or uniforms or yeah. you know, just a variety of things, and it's really quite rewarding, because instead of just this funding going into a big faceless kind of entity back to headquarters and getting spent on you know, on bureaucracy, we're actually able to see these funds go directly and have direct benefits on the areas of the park in which the event takes place. So that's yeah. that's very rewarding, and it's really nice for the runners, because they can really see the difference that their sort of contribution is making. So that's been a big part of the event right from the start, and it's, you know, it's something we feel very strongly about.
Yeah, you've got to maintain and make it even more special event, and that is something which you've clearly, you know, done so well there, you know,
government funding has also become more and more challenging for a lot of these wildlife agencies, especially right. if they aren't necessarily in the glamorous kind of big five rhino elephants, you know, lion yeah. areas, and you know, the Southern Drakensberg is, in that regard, even though it's visually magnificent, it doesn't have the sort of signature species like of the big five or, yeah. or things like that. So it can, from a funding perspective, from government side, tend to, you know, sort of be at the end of the queue. So being able to make a difference directly with the events has been great. And they actually have come to rely on some of that funding quite heavily, which is daunting, but also very, very rewarding. Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, that's that basically just shows just how far you've come, you know, and how special the event is that, you know, it's been so well received, and how you showcase it as well. You know, a lot of it is just down to the marketing of the event and what people see, and you're clearly very, very good at doing that, you know. So well done, you know, well done to you and the team. Yeah. You know?
Well, that's good to hear. Thank you.
No, brilliant.
Thank you. Yeah, it's good to hear.
The elevation, obviously, in terms of, you know, some of the UK runners that see are often going to the Alps, you know, training there, or they may be, if they stay in the UK, they'll go to Scotland or Snowdonia or Lake District.
Yeah. Yes.
In terms of the elevation for the, let's say, the 100 mile, the 160K, what kind of elevation is involved in that event?
So it's not a, in terms of just the vertical gain, it's not over the top. It's for the 100 mile, it's sort of, it always varies on different devices, but it's sort of between 5,500 and 6,000 meters.
Yeah.
So it's solid, but it's not extreme. If you think of, I mean, even Mont Blanc or whatever, as a, you know, I think sitting at about 10,000 vert. But what we've, well, there's obviously two elevations that's, you know, there's the vertical climb, and then there's also just the altitude above sea level. And I think that is much more of a challenge at UTD than just the vertical gain. That first 70-odd kilometers in Lesotho and the 100-miler is all between sort of 2,850 meters and just under 3,500 meters above sea level. And that's, is without doubt one of the biggest challenges at UTD. A lot of runners take a lot of flack in that first section.
Yeah.
Also because it's an extremely, you know, it's an extremely remote and daunting area. So you kind of the weather can be very extreme as well. So you kind of got altitude, you've got wind, you've got cold, and you've got a sense of being absolutely isolated. So from an elevation perspective, I'd say that is probably the biggest factor in the 100 miler. And then, yeah, I mean, obviously once they come down out of Lesotho, they descend into South Africa down a portion of the Sani Pass, which is one of the more famous passes in Southern Africa. And then they get back into the trail. But by the time they get down to sort of the 100K mark, they're down to sort of 1,600-1,700 meters, so they've dropped nearly 2,000 meters. So that descent is also quite punishing. You know, it's not something that people always give too much credit to, but those big descents can really take it out of you. So that's also quite a big factor at UTD. And then, yeah, I guess that's, from an elevation perspective, that's as low as they get, that sort of 1,600 meter, which is still not low, you know. It's an interesting run in that regard. It's certainly, I think, a run where an experienced runner will look at the distance, look at the vert, and probably come up with a time in their heads, and generally they will be wrong. Is kind of what we found with UTD. It's kind of it's insidious. It's a sneakily challenging course, and then certainly that first 70Ks is a big factor, and then also the fact that it's so much on trail, genuine pure hiking trail, so you get very little mileage for free. You know, you're not getting very long stretches of open road or anything like that. You know, you're constantly on trails, so it's mentally very challenging in that regard as well, because there's no sort of heads up 4 minute K running, you know, for the average guy. You know, it's very much having to keep your focus, keep your concentration constantly because of the technicality of the trails. And when I say technicality, they're not super technical trails, but they're just trails all the time. So you just can't switch off. And I think that is also a big factor at UTD.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. That's great to kind of get that insight, because you're always kind of trying to find out more details and try and zoom in, and the map will only ever tell you so much, you know. So it's yeah, it's good to get that insight.
Sorry, I am rambling on. I'm sorry if my answers are long.
No, no,
I'm just
no.
trying
I think
to give
it's
you as much. I'm sure you can
it.
prune it as much as you need to.
The, the one of the interesting things that you mentioned is the descent. I noticed on the website that the descent is 7,000 and of 7,000 meters just on descent alone, which is higher, a bigger number than than the ascent. So it just kind of shows just what you're up against, you know.
And that's definitely, it's just, and for most, if not all of the runners, except for possibly just the top 5% and maybe the back markers, a large part of that big descent off the top of the berg is in the middle of the night. So, you know, if you're starting at 10 a.m. on the Friday morning, by the time they've done their 70 odd k's up in Lesotho and start descending, it's Friday night. So it's technical in the dark. It's just that little bit more challenging. It's also, you know, those early hours, the 2, 3, 4 in the morning when the brain isn't as, you know, on top of its game as it normally is. So that descent is definitely a big factor in the race, and not something, you know, that people can just disregard. I think anyone who either disregards it or tries to push it too hard down there can pay later. Definitely, it's, you know, when you've got that kind of descending in your legs, and then, you know, you haven't got much in reserve, it can be very challenging.
That's the beauty about ultra running, isn't it? You'll see a whole variety, and you can never tell. You look at an ultra runner, you go, I'm not sure, and they'll do, they'll surprise you, won't they? You know, it's very, very hard to know, isn't it?
And then something just to touch on, which made me think of the descent, or talking about the descent, is once you do get down, that you then come into we've got two pacing sections where you can join up with a pacer if you want. So that's just also something we've added in the last couple of years, which is quite a nice option for many runners, where they've sort of at this stage done 100 k's of the most extreme remote trails, and I've seen very few people other than at aid stations, and then suddenly there's sort of 38 k's or so where they can pick up a mate and have them pace them for 38 k's before. And but then what we also do, which I'm quite pleased that the course lends itself to, that is that pacing section doesn't extend to the finish. So there's a they have that section, and then there's sort of 23 k's where they go right back into the mountains, where it's completely remote and isolated again, and they've got to kind of get their shit together all by themselves, you know, and get through to the finish. So, you know, I think that's also quite a nice element that we've been able to, when we changed the course a couple of years ago, to all finish at the hotel, this was something that then became an option which hadn't been before. So yeah, we've put that out there, and yeah, quite a few people do take it up.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially if they're traveling with somebody, you know, that's a good option to have. So the paces, that's just for the 160K
And the 100 k's,
and
so
a
the
hundred
100 k's
K.
can also have a pacer there.
Brilliant.
Yeah, so there's this section where when we changed the course a couple of years ago, prior to that it was completely in the mountains the entire time, which was fantastic in many ways in terms of the purity of the race, but it was actually undermining the viability of the race, simply because the logistical challenges were so extreme for all parties. So when we kind of slightly compromised and changed the course by bringing it through different areas, it opened up this area that comes through some of the most beautiful farmlands that you could ever hope to see, and it's actually turned out to be a real blessing, because I was kind of stuck on being a purist and staying in the mountains and not coming anywhere near anything that wasn't in the World Heritage Sites. And then, you know, practicality kind of overruled me. And in hindsight, it's actually been an absolute blessing for the event, because what it does is you know, the 100 miler runners have sort of 100 Ks of the most, as I say, remote and extreme running. And then they kind of run through a much friendlier 30 or 40 Ks of, yeah, of farmlands and more supporters and places where people can park on the side of the road and right next to the trail. And it's made for quite a fun kind of interactive section. And, you know, it's, I guess, a little bit like the Mont Blancs and whatnot of this world, where you're out somewhere and then you come back down and you come through a little village and then out you go again. Mm. And it's brought that kind of elements, that's almost a bit of a sort of European feel to UTD. And yeah, and it's actually, I'm very pleased with the way it's turned out. And then also by virtue of the fact that you then are sent back into the very remote mountains for the last 23 Ks, mm, it kind of keeps you honest in that regard. So
yeah,
I quite like that variety now that it's kind of,
yeah,
happened.
Yeah. I completely, yeah, get that. It is having that, you want to be a purist, but it's also having that balance. Mm. You know, how do you get them off the mountains, mm, if something goes, mm, wrong, you know, in that position, yeah, when you're already, your teams are deployed here, then, you know, everywhere. It's very, very difficult, mm, isn't it? And just having that balance sometimes, yeah, that peace of mind is, and that extra, yeah, checkpoint at a lower section of the course, which is, just allows, you know, everybody to just know, yeah, okay, that's cool. Yeah, you know, we know where, yeah, people are up to, how they're, yeah, looking, you know? So yeah, it is, it is that window, isn't it? And
yeah, that's, you did that.
Like you say, you know, it's the magic as well. When you open up something else, it, you know, it does give you that opportunity of bringing in that that support and the magic to come in a different way.
Yeah, I've really been blown away. And what it's also done, which unexpectedly, is it's really brought the local community much closer and much more involved in the event. Because previously it was kind of a, you know, all these mad runners would appear in the area and disappear into the mountains for a day and a half and then disappear again. And the local village and the local farmers and everybody who lived in the area were sort of very vaguely aware of it, but had no real context or idea of what UTD was about. And yeah, by bringing this section through a more sort of populated, I mean populated in the very loosest terms, yeah, but a sort of a more farmland kind of area, has really brought the events alive in the sort of awareness and imagination of the Underberg people. And that's also been a huge positive, because they now are sort of seeing the value of the event to the community and the area, but also keen to get involved and keen to, you know, yeah, and that lends a local flavor to the event that we wouldn't have been able to supply as the organizers.
Yeah.
So I think that's been a very positive outcome as well.
And I think as well is that, you know, that there's, you can't put value on those kind of things, can you? You know, it's just, you can, no amount of money, yeah, can buy that, you know.
Yeah,
it's really important.
Yeah. Yeah, and then, and also, I think just while still speaking about the course, what I'm also still very pleased about, though, is that the 62K and the 32K and the 21K are all still 100% in the mountain, on the trails, in the World Heritage Site. So they have completely retained that pure mountain trail feel.
Yeah.
What it does mean is, you know, I've been to a number of events over the years where the shorter distances kind of felt like an add-on or a sort of, you know, a forgotten, yeah, cousin kind of to the main events. And often, you know, didn't necessarily have as good a course, or were just sort of tacked on, you know, and it was like a semi-road run or something like that. So those three distances, I've always regarded them as so important, because I see them as kind of the feeder system to the bigger distances. Yeah. And we've definitely seen that over the years, where someone comes along and does a 21 and the next year they're doing the 32 and the next year they're doing the 100K or something like that. So mm-hmm. the fact that those three distances are still very pure mountain runs does sort of keep the integrity of that side of things very, very strong. So I'm very pleased with the way those have stayed.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's It just sounds an amazing event, you know, from an outside looking in, it does. And also as a fellow race director, you know, I'm like, you know, that's just very, very special, very, very special. Would
Thank
you?
you.
No problem at all. I did notice online that Ultra Trail Cape Town and yourselves, kind of, are you coming together? Yeah,
Yeah, so very, very excited about that. Because, my day job, I'm actually a farmer, so that's actually what I'm supposed to be doing 90% of the time, not running around the mountains chasing athletes. So, so starting UTD and getting it to where it is has been fantastic. But I have been aware over the last 18 months that what I can give to the event and just the ability of, I've got a very small team around me to elevate it to where it needs to be and to continue to grow, and especially to grow its international profile. I was going to need some kind of partnership or assistance or something like that. And, living out where we do as farmers in a remote area, that's difficult to achieve in the first place because we just don't have the people around us to form those kind of groups or whatever it might be. And I've been friends with the guys from UTCT for years, and they sort of have been very supportive of UTD because they kind of see it as an event that can grow the sport in the country and also is a completely different offering to what they do. So they've always, they've been to, Stuart from UTCT has been to every UTD, whether he's been running or helping or whatever. And at the beginning of this year, they kind of reached out and said, what are your thoughts on us getting involved? And I just said to them, well, it's amazing that you said that because I've been thinking exactly the same thing and I just haven't been sure, who to reach out to. So yeah, they reached out and we had a good chat over a number of months, and eventually sort of August, September now, they committed and they've bought into UTD. So they are now, Summit Events is the name of their company. So Summit is partnered formally with UTD, and I'm really, really excited about the future now because both UTCT and UTD dovetail so well in that the calendar works really nicely for us. We're in April, they're in November, and then just across the board, what we offer is so different to what they offer, and vice versa. It's a really nice contrast, and also then from a skill set perspective, those guys are really good on putting on the big show, and they're really good with their international connections and their international elites and all those sides of things, which are definitely my weak points. Just, it's hard for me to do any of that living where I do and basically being busy with farming and whatnot. So having them bring that whole list of skill sets to UTD is just something I'm so excited about because it's gonna take UTD, I'm hoping, to where into the next level, which I certainly was feeling quite intimidated at how I was going to do that on my own.
Well, it's an absolutely remarkable journey that you've been on, and to say, from, to recognize that you need that kind of input, is also very, you're one of those people that reflects and know, your weaknesses as well as your strengths, So, but yeah, I think it's very and you've chosen by the sounds of things, Stuart, if he's been there and he's helped out and he's been integrated into it, you've chosen really, really well there, so he'll know the values that you have and he'll share them,
I think so. They've definitely, a big part of our conversation when we were considering the partnership was that they have no desire to change what UTD is and what it stands for and the kind of feel it has. All they want to do is elevate what it already is. So that was, you know, they're not trying to create UTCT in the Drakensberg. You know, they're trying to have a sister event now that offers a completely different product and stays true to its core value, you know, its core values. And and that for me was a big selling point in being happy to partner with them. And also they've, as you say, you know, they've been to the event so many times, they've got a deep understanding of what it is and what it stands for. And also I think they have a very clear idea of its potential. And, you know, I think that's also in a way a stamp of approval that guys like that who have been so involved with running for quite a number of years now and trail obviously internationally and everything else, if they can see value there, it does kind of give you confidence that you're on the right track.
100%. And it must have been extremely difficult over the years to have done that with, you know, not just by yourself, but a lot of people don't realize just how much goes in sort of behind the scenes. You know, it must have been extremely difficult.
It's a massive thing. And, you know, to be honest, I was getting to the stage where I was half looking forward to, but also half dreading each year's event, because, you know, I was trying to elevate it every year and keep growing it and make sure that this year is better than last year. And I was starting to get that sort of, oh my God, what am I going to do now? Kind of feeling with regard to growing it. And I felt like I'd maximized all the things that I was relatively good at. And then the other things were, going to be a concern. So it's been good timing to be able to bring those guys in.
It's more than anything as well, it's just knowing that you can get somebody out off the mountains if you needed to, and just having that a bigger team to basically respond to those kind of things. Ultimately, you know, as a race organizer, that's all that you're interested in. Everybody comes home safe, you know what I mean? So it's crazy, isn't it? You know, it's that more than anything is what matters, you know, ultimately. And absolutely, fundamentally, you've got to make the right decision in your, you know, head and heart, and you definitely have. You know, if you felt it coming, then brilliant, you know, great step to make. And identifying
the stars aligned.
So in terms of next year's event, if people were interested and wanted to find out a bit more about your race, Ultra Trail Drakensberg, where would they go to? What would they do? Type it in Google, or what's your website?
Yeah, so obviously website would probably be one of the first ports of call. So that's, you know, www.ultratraildrakensberg.com. And then all our social media channels, we've got a very good team in that regard. So whether it's Facebook or Instagram in particular, we do a little bit on Twitter, but nothing of note. Certainly our Instagram and Facebook pages are a huge part of our brand. So that's always, those three places would be the first ports of call. And then, we also happy to just enjoy engaging directly with runners. So I get, you know, we've got our info at UTD inbox, and I get heaps of emails there, and I'm constantly, you know, chatting to runners and answering questions and doing things like that. So any channel that, you know, someone wants to reach out on, we're always ready and waiting to chat. So those would probably be the best places.
That's brilliant. And I did notice that there's so much information, you know, in terms of schedule and everything like that. The information is it's very, very rich in terms of what's on your website. You know, it's very, very good. Very high level.
Well, thanks. We want to make it as easy as possible for those with potentially low information and who could potentially be put off by the unknown. The last thing we want is a situation where someone's keen to do the run and they have no issues with the run, but they don't come because they're concerned about other unknowns, whether it's travel or accommodation or things like that. So we have recognized that's definitely something we need to, you know, always keep an eye on and make sure that hopefully we can alleviate any concerns in that regard, and make the trip to Underberg as easy as possible.
Well, you're doing an amazing job yourself and your team there, and really appreciate your time today and sharing more details about Ultra Trail Drakensberg.